So, welcome to part two of personal learning, taking ownership of learning online. And on the home slide here, which you should be seeing, I have links to the presentation on my own page as well for the slideshow, and I have an audio recording. I don't have the video recording at the moment, but I hope to be able to put them up there at some point. So the previous presentation is at www.downs.ca/presentation/525. And one of the things I did with that presentation, this is a pro tip, is I have a Google Nexus phone, although other phones will do this as well. And you can see I'm recording the audio. And this is a good thing to do in general if you're doing a presentation. But also what this does, and I can't show it right now because it's recording audio, is it will automatically generate a transcript. So I've taken the unedited transcript. It's created by machine learning by my phone, and converts it into text, and I've put that on that presentation page. So it doesn't match up exactly. It makes mistakes. It likes to split sentences into two. But still, it's really helpful to have an automatic transcription of the talk. This is especially important, I have found over the years. People who view my presentations, they're not always sighted. They're not always full of hearing. So if somebody is hard of hearing, having the text is really useful. Similarly, this is why I create audio transcripts as well as videos. Somebody who doesn't see well, like me, can still follow along the presentation. They don't have to download the whole video. They have a smaller audio file that they can listen to and follow along in the slides. And I'm always very careful when I'm giving my presentation to take into account the fact that somebody might not be viewing the slides. And in fact, we've got two attendees here who are not viewing the slides. They're on the telephone or an audio only link. I don't know exactly what you're on. So, this is always important. And I try to take care of that, attend to that when I'm doing a presentation. So this presentation will be available at www.downs.ca/presentation/528. Give me a little bit of time to put it up. It doesn't happen instantly, although, this is a busy day for me, so it might not appear until tomorrow or the next day, but it'll certainly appear. So, the other thing I like to say at the start of my presentations is that this presentation is for you, not for me. I can give a presentation anytime I want. I have a camera. I'm always willing to change the presentation, to respond to inquiries partway through, answer questions, whatever. In fact, this presentation is an example of that. We had originally scheduled for a single two-hour presentation. And here we are in part two. We didn't rush through part one. And so there was a lot of content left over. So that's fine. I have no problem with that. And if life treats us that way, we may do a part three. I'm not going to rush. I'm going to take my time, especially, and that allows people to comment without worrying, oh, that means we won't get through all the material. I'm not going to worry about that. I welcome your commentary and your contributions. That's why we're doing this live on Zoom. So, how does that sound so far?
It sounds fantastic.
Okay. And we have 2 hours again, right?
45. Well, 1 hour. We have 90 minutes.
90 minutes. Okay. That's fine. I booked 2 hours just in case, but yeah. That's all right. We may end up doing a part three. I've been thinking about this presentation, actually, between last time and this time. And there's almost a part that I want to put between part one and part two. So, but anyhow, we'll leave that aside for now. All right. So, just to set the context so that you know a little bit about me. Now, if you've listened to part one or watched part one, you already know this part. But my name is Stephen Downs. I work with the National Research Council of Canada. That means I work for the government, and nobody is more surprised than me that I work for the government, but there you have it. I've been in this field for a long time. I've been writing papers since 1986. I've been working on these sorts of issues from even before that. I have experience teaching with Athabasca University, the University of Alberta, Grand Prairie Regional College, and Assiniboine Community College. I've taught in cities, and I've gotten into a small car and driven to northern Alberta and taught at various First Nations, such as Blue Quills, Yellowhead Tribal Council, and the Alberta Vocational College out in Gruard and also in Slave Lake, back when it was the Sunshine Project in Slave Lake. So that's ages ago. And I've focused on open online learning. I've focused on personal learning. And I've focused on the idea that learning is about connecting people, places, ideas, and even the neurons in our brain. I've thought a lot about that over the years. In 2004-2005, with my colleague George Siemens, we came up with a concept called connectivism, which is a theory, a learning theory for the digital age, as George described it. And then in 2008, we created the world's first massive open online course. And I've been since then developing things like personal learning environments and looking at ethics and analytics and related subjects. I also mentioned last week, or last time, my research workflow. And basically, I find research to be kind of like a type of personal learning. So I have a four-stage process. Aggregate, which means to bring stuff in together from a wide range of diverse sources. The more diverse, the better. I don't focus on a single topic, but I collect material from the fields of journalism, computers, education and learning theory, and philosophy, and especially philosophy of mind and philosophy of knowledge. And I take this and I remix it and I reorganize it. I find similarities, I compare different things, and I repurpose it. I put it into my own language, summarize these things for myself, maybe create something. I use the material to create courses. I use the material to create projects. I use the material to create presentations like this one. And then feed forward, which is a really important part of this process because that's where all the good stuff happens. By sharing the things that I've created, by sharing what I've learned, I'm able to make connections with people out there in the world, and I get feedback and criticisms and ideas and more resources, etc., from them. And it starts the whole cycle going all over again. And it's a virtuous cycle in the sense that the more I share, the more people share with me, the more knowledge all of us together are able to create. And many of the things, all of the things that I've created over the years and maybe have gotten credit for, really, in my mind, these are things that the community as a whole has created, and I've been able to be a part of that. And I think that's, to me, that's really important to understand that, you know, it's not some guy working in his office who comes up with these things. It's a community working together. And learning works that way as well. It's not one person sitting behind a computer, you know, doing exercises or memorizing facts. It's a person, a computer, a community around that they connect to, the community, their home community, their own environment. All of these things come together to create learning. And the learning, as I say in a theoretical sense, emerges from that. You don't stack it up like bricks, but rather it emerges from or arises from the connectivity of all of those things combined. So that's the background. And, you know, I love talking about that stuff, and I go on about it. For this webinar, what we're looking at is the difference between personalized learning and personal learning, and why personal learning is the preferred concept. But also we're talking about the starting points for personal learning, what we're trying to do with personal learning, and the strategies to implement personal learning for ourselves. And the way I've structured this presentation is in two parts. The first part, and we didn't finish this first part last time, is the practical side of it. Where we think of ourselves as learners first, and then I look at what are the starting points for personal learning ourselves, and I look at what are relevance, usability, and interactivity, and how to support these. And then secondly, I will be looking at the theory of personal learning, and here we change hats, as it were. And now we're looking at it from an administrator or an instructional perspective and thinking about, okay, what is personal learning? What are the starting points? And how do we support personal learning for others themselves? And I'm just seeing now that URL there is horribly, horribly incorrect. The previous presentation, as I mentioned, is presentation/525, and this current one will be presentation/528. You can explore the other numbers too. I did a few other presentations in between these two. So that's where we are. So last time I discussed the first two of the three principles. The first principle was interaction. And, you know, you can see how this follows from the learning theory or the approach to learning that I talked about a few moments ago. The idea here is that we learn by participating in a learning community, or sometimes called a community of practice. Or my colleagues at Athabasca University would call it a community of inquiry. And so we talked about the importance of that and how to make that happen, and even some underground guerrilla tactics to make that for yourself if it is not being provided by a formal institution. Then the second principle was usability. And what's important about usability is that it's a process where when you encounter content, materials, tools, whatever, out there in the world, and they're presented to you, that you take these and you reform them into something that works for you. In my process, I called this remix and repurpose. And this is what I'm up to with remixing and repurposing. I'm trying to make materials that are relatively simple and relatively consistent. And this is all based on the idea that I'm creating my own knowledge base. I'm creating my own personal representation, if you will, of the knowledge that I'm trying to learn. And in my work, I've been creating these newsletters, as we talked about just at the beginning. And these newsletters are created out of little short summaries of the resources that I read as part of my research. And it began, and still exists, as me doing something for myself, me keeping a record of my own research, and then sharing that, and following this principle, using a simple, consistent vocabulary and language that I understand, so that I can go back through my knowledge base when I need to, and I can organize knowledge for myself in my own mind. So those are the first two principles. And now we're caught up from where we were last time. Today, we're going to look at the third principle, relevance, sometimes called salience. I love the word salience. It's not because, you know, it's a word everybody knows, but I like the way it sounds. Relevance is, does it matter to you? And salience is, does it stand out? Does it sparkle? Both of those things are important. The main idea here is that when you're managing your own learning, it is up to you to find and select the material or the content that you're going to be working with. And so what's important is that this material be relevant to you now. And you see there's an element of time and place here, right? I might really want to learn about Stirling engines, but the time I really need to know about Stirling engines is if I'm repairing one. Otherwise, it's not as immediately practical. But conversely, when I'm repairing Stirling engines, I would like to have information that is relevant to what I'm doing right now. So the idea is sometimes in the commercial literature, they write about learning that is just in time instead of just in case. And that kind of fits it, but that's not all of it. Relevance is getting the content and the resources and the tools and the help, including people or facilities or whatever, what you want, when you want it, and where you want it. There's nothing worse than having a tool, but you know it's 50 kilometers away and you're out at the shop and you need it and you don't have it. It's the same thing applies to learning. So there's two aspects that I've identified here. The one aspect is the content. The content or the material or the tool has to actually apply to what you're trying to do. And then the second aspect, location, location, location. It needs to be where you are, right? It needs to be available to you. That's why I love these things, these phones, right? Because wherever I am, my phone is here too. And that means I have access to learning. Now, I'd have better access to learning if I had better internet coverage, but as I'm sure you know, large parts of the country are not covered with cell phone signals. That's a problem. I encounter that when I'm out on my bike rides and, you know, I get into this no coverage area. So I have to make sure I download my material ahead of time, kind of plan ahead. But that's me making sure and being proactive and making sure that what I need is on my phone in case the connectivity is not there. And, you know, this applies more generally. I think in the longer term, not today, obviously, but in the longer term, learning and content and tools are going to be made available not just through computers, not just through our mobile phones, but through other tools and other technologies. You know, newer cars already provide some of this. Some of your I read about a tennis racket that teaches you how to play tennis. I haven't tried that, so I can't say for sure that it's any good. But that's kind of the idea, right? Getting the learning right in your tools. But a lot of times, you can't count on learning providers to do that for you. Certainly, you know, a traditional educational institution, they have the perspective, you have to come to us if you want to learn, which works really well for them, doesn't work as well for you. So what you want to do as much as possible is turn that around and have the learning come to you rather than you have to go to the learning, because that's how it becomes relevant to you. So how do we do this? Step one, maximize your sources. If you are depending on only one source for learning, you're in a position where it's difficult to get learning when and where you want it, much less what you want. I use, as I mentioned, RSS. You might recall a bunch of slides above here in my workflow, right? The aggregation and the feed list part of it. That's me using this RSS technology to gather all kinds of sources and materials. Blogs, articles, academic papers, reports, email, social media, and I could have included, comments from friends, feedback from presentations, the pictures that I take when I go out, actually going out and looking at things for myself, interviews, etc. The more sources of information you get, the better you are going to be, you know, the better off you're going to be when you're in a position where you need to learn something, you're more likely to have that material on hand somehow. One of the things that I've gotten really good at, is using Google. And you might think of Google, but I've maintained that if you combine Google search and YouTube, etc., anything you need to learn, anything, is available. And it's really easy to prove. You prove it to yourself. You don't need to take my word for it. Think of a topic that you might want to learn about and do a search for it on Google or a search for it on YouTube, and there you are. You'll find learning resources. In fact, you'll find a bunch of learning resources. This slide here says Google Reader. That should be changed. And in fact, I'll change it right now so that it's not wrong in the final presentation. I have to find it here. It's tiny. Three principles. Da-da-da-da. Right. So instead of Google.com Reader, let's say Feedly.com. That's a service that I use, and you can see it. In fact, here it is. I'm assuming. Oh, wait, you might not be seeing that. Stop share. Share screen. And. Right, so this is Feedly, and on the left-hand side here, these are all the sources. Now, each one of these individual sources, you see I've organized them into category, but each one of these individual sources corresponds to an individual blog or resource. Now, I've read all of those. Let's pick this one. Okay, Doug Peterson is a well-known Toronto or Ontario educator. So here are some posts that he's put up. So, and if I click on one of these links, it takes me to Doug Peterson's webpage. And now I can read Doug Peterson's content directly for myself. Right? And then he's one of these people also who shares. And so here we go. Here's a link that he's shared to the Best of Ontario Educators Daily, and then to an article in CBC, The Future of School May Be Outdoors Even After the Pandemic. And that's useful. And just as an aside, I think it's good that the future of schools is outdoors. I mean, learning online isn't about sitting in front of a computer. I mean, it's partially that, but mostly it's using the capacity of the computer to free yourself from the classroom and to go outdoors. We'll talk about that in a few moments. So, let's go back to the presentation. La-di-da-di-da. There we are. You should be seeing the presentation again. It's kind of tricky to do all this like on the fly, but yeah, I'm getting the hang of it. So, yeah, maximize your sources. You don't have to use an RSS reader, but it is important to get, you're learning from as many different sources as possible. You cannot depend on an employer, say, to provide a class for you. You cannot depend on being able to access college or university. I went for a number of years before I was able to access university, and in that time, before going to university, I didn't just kind of hang around and wait. I did a lot of proactive learning on my own. Now, back then, there was no internet, or at least none that anyone could use. So I had to do things like go to the library, read newspapers, read books, magazines, talk to people, etc. Right? Again, the key lesson here is, it's important to be proactive. It's important to go out and find the material that will be useful to you. Don't sit and wait for it. You've got to go out and get it. Step two, filter ruthlessly. Most of everything is junk, including this presentation. You know, you don't have to believe everything you read. In fact, you don't have to read everything that's in front of you. Think of the world or a course or a book or anything as though it were a newspaper or as though it were a menu in a restaurant. Most people do not read a newspaper from page one to the last page, every single bit of content in between. They just don't. Why would you? Most of it you're not interested in. Similarly, when you go to a restaurant, most people do not order every single thing on the menu because that would be crazy. You order the things on the menu that you want. And the entire world is like that. You know, I've talked about in the past about our brains being perception machines, right? Our brain is a sensory organ, right? Its purpose is to recognize things that are happening out there in the world. But a key function that our brain does is filter. You look at a forest, you're not looking at every single tree. You know, you might be looking at the forest generally, sure. But if you're looking tree level, you're looking at one tree, then another tree, then another tree, then the tiger, then another tree, then another. Oh, wait, tiger. You see, focus is important. And so you've got lots of information coming into you. Hopefully, if you've done step one, you're getting it from many diverse sources. But now you have to pick and choose what information is relevant to you. When George and I ran our MOOC for the first time, we did step one. We set up an environment for participants that would give them access to a lot of diverse kinds of information. And people complained. They said, there's way too much information here. How do you expect us to learn it all? And our response was, we don't. That would be crazy. Well, we didn't say that would be crazy, because that would be rude. We said, the first task in one of our courses is for you as a participant to learn how to find what's important to you. And so that's the step here. Filter. And filter mostly means select what you want as opposed to blocking what you don't want. I mentioned that in one of the earlier segments, push versus pull, right? It's easier to select what you want than filter what you don't want. So you have this big pool of information that you've gathered, sort of maybe a lake of information, because hopefully there's a lot, and then you just pick from it what you want. So the other part is getting it where you want. And the key thing here is for you as a learner to be proactive about what your information priorities are. One of the things I've learned over the years is there's no shortage of people in the world who are prepared to tell you what's important to you. And sometimes it is, I mean, it's not like their advice is useless, but a lot of the times it isn't. And there's all kinds of reasons why it might not be. It might not be relevant to you because it's in the wrong language, or it's designed for a different environment, or for a different culture, or it's too complicated, or it's too simple. You already know it, you know? So it's ultimately up to you to think about and decide what information, what content, what services speak to you. The best anyone else can do, including me, is make suggestions. And I'll make suggestions. But even during this session, my hope is that as you listen to what I'm saying, you say, yeah, I like that. No, I don't like that. Yeah, I like that. No, I don't like that. Right? And pick and choose from the things that I've said that apply to you and reject the things that don't. I hope that that's how you're treating this presentation because that's how I treat presentations, and I find that I get more out of them that way. One more thing, and then I'm going to pause to see if there are any comments or questions. So think about that. Getting it where and when you want. And there's two aspects to this. First of all, and it's almost ironic because we're doing kind of a formal class or session, but in general, shun formal classes and sessions in favor of informal activities. Informal, I mean, there's my old colleague Jay Cross used to say there's formal learning and there's informal learning. And we spend all this time and money and effort on formal learning. And it has its place. But 80% of our learning is informal. 80% of our learning is based on getting out there, talking to people, trying things out, practicing, reflecting on that practice. Some people call it water cooler knowledge or water cooler learning. That's nice if you have a water cooler, but I don't. So maybe it's coffee pot, or I don't know, right? It's, the learning that you get just by being somebody who does that kind of things. One thing I do is I bicycle quite a bit. And I could take a course in how to repair my bicycle, and that might be useful. Certainly teach me some things I don't know, like, the tools that I need, so that I should bring them with me. But I've learned over the years that the best way to learn how to repair a bicycle is to be out there partway through a ride repairing a bicycle. And I've learned more from practical experience doing it than I ever would from a class. Class is useful, but really, your learning when and where you want it is probably going to be informal learning. So getting it where and when you want means do connect to your work or your learning at home or even on vacation, but feel free to sleep in the more formal sessions. Okay, that's kind of a bad way to put it, but how do I want to put that? Most work environments are dysfunctional. It's not as true now as it used to be, but it's still pretty true. A lot of places where people work, they're not good places to learn. But what you need to do is take the freedom or the liberty to take some of the time that you're working, or even some of the time that you're attending classes in college or university and make that your personal learning time. And that personal learning time can be any time. It might be in the evening, might be first thing in the morning. For me, it's a bit of both. But that means, in order to avoid burning myself out, if I'm doing some learning, especially work-related learning on my own time, it seems reasonable to me to spend some of my work time for me, kind of as a trade-off. Now, you have to be careful about how you do that, right? But I'm not sure if I mentioned this last time, but there's an old principle from sea mariners, the people who worked in the tall ships, pirates and whatever. I've been reading about pirates recently. and they're up in the masts, folding the sails and things like that. And they had a slogan, one hand for the ship, one hand for yourself. Always hang on, always be hanging on, even while you're doing work for the ship. And that principle applies here. It applies for any kind of work environment you find yourself in, any kind of learning environment that you find yourself in, etc. One hand for whatever the job is that you're doing, even your formal education, but another hand for yourself. You need both of those to make this work for yourself. Just as an aside, I don't want to say it takes courage, although and sometimes it does. But it takes a sense of determination and a sense that you have the right to this. And I found over the years, I've worked with and taught a lot of people, and that's a hard thing. I mean, I've been lucky, and there's a back in here somewhere, there's a really stubborn streak that I've had this. And it's this stubborn streak that has put me in the position that I am. But it's hard for people sometimes to say, in this work environment, I have to make sure for myself that I'm continuing to learn, that I'm developing my capacities, etc. It takes a certain amount of courage, a certain amount of self-confidence, a certain amount of determination. And, that's the thing I can't teach in this session. That's the thing, that's the 80% where you have to go out and try doing it and learn for yourself what works and what doesn't work, how much you can take for yourself, what kind of learning on the job or learning on the fly, or learning at home if you're working at home, what kind of learning works best for you. So let me stop here just for a moment, because I don't want to just babble on and on, and see if there are any comments. And I'll check. Can I check the chat? I don't know. Oh, I don't think I can. Yeah, I can't check the chat.
If you press Alt H, you can see the chat.
Yeah. There we go. Oh, yeah. Oh, and there's comments in the chat. Oh, the comment is, please post questions in chat. So, yeah, we've got Arlene from Nipissing and Manisha, of course, introducing herself. Are there any comments or questions that anyone would like to interject? Manisha, maybe you have something?
So, as a First Nations tribal college, the mode of instruction was the instructor would teach and student would listen it face to face most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
60-70% content was delivered either by an elder, knowledge keeper, or an instructor. And in the indigenous culture, you do not ask questions when the elder is presenting. You may ask in the end, but you do not interrupt a knowledge keeper or an elder. And now we're speaking of relevant salience, personalized, personal learning, So when it is Sage on the stage, and a content expert delivering, then how do we personalize learning individually? How do we get to know our learners? What are the assessment? You know, it's not just visual or kinesthetics. How much time is needed? Because in order to personalize learning, I need to know, I cannot just say differentiated instruction. That does not solve the issue, at least my problem.
Yeah.
So it's same, similar to saying personalized. So how much time do you think it takes to getting to know your learners to help them succeed in their academic, informal education?
Oh, that's an excellent question. And I'm going to be the last person to say, oh, don't listen to your elders. I think you should listen to your elders. And, and that's going to be an important part of learning. Just as, when I was in university, listening to my professors was similarly important. And I had the same kind of issue myself. And I'll tell you how I addressed it. And this might give you a sense. And there's two things. Two major things. First of all, the time that my professors were speaking to me, and in your cases, the time that your elders are speaking to you, that's not all day, every day. It's a certain period of time, right? So that's one mode of learning. But then there's the remainder of the day outside of that. When you're not listening because you're doing other things, that's where the rest of your learning is happening. And so the attitude to have is, in my view, that all of that time you're learning, when you're listening to the professor or the elder, and when you're out in the community as a whole doing whatever it is that you do. And so you're finding information, finding content, getting sources, thinking about what you're learning, etc. All the time. Always one hand for yourself, one hand for the ship, one hand for yourself. But what about when the professor is thinking, what about when the elder is speaking? Here's what I did. Especially, in the lower level classes at university where, there were 300 people in the class and you couldn't interrupt to ask a question. And there are many contexts where interrupting's not going to be an option. But what I would do, I would always take notes. Now, understand, the purpose of taking notes isn't to give yourself content to study from later. I mean, you might do that, but, and I did that from time to time, but most of the notes that I took, I didn't really review very much later on. What the purpose of taking notes is to put yourself in the frame of mind where you are actively listening to the speaker. It's not enough to just sit and listen. Because it's very difficult to learn that way. Because you're not taking the information that you're receiving and engaging with it. And there's different ways to talk about what's happening or not happening here. But basically, what's being said to you is not necessarily being integrated with the rest of your knowledge. It's not being remixed with other things, it's not being repurposed, etc. Right? You're getting this really valuable content, and it's almost like you're letting it go by you. So I would take notes. And the idea of the note is to be listening to capture what the person is saying and in some way to represent that for myself in my own words. So I'm not trying to copy what they're saying. Very important. You see what Minisha is doing in the chat here on the side? She's sort of doing that. I guess if you can't, if you're not in the, if you're listening by audio only, you can't see it, but she's written some notes about what I've been talking about in the chat area, right? It's that sort of thing. Now, in different contexts, you can do different things. The key here is to, as the information comes into you, as the content comes into you, whatever it is, to be in some way acting upon it as soon as you can, immediately if you can. And so I got into that habit. And I have lovely notes from when I was a university student. But I also got into that habit as a journalist. The whole time I was studying at university, I was also working as a journalist on the student newspaper. And when you're interviewing a source, might be the president of the university, I did that many times, might be a minister of advanced education, which I've done as well. And they're talking, and you're not really in a position to be questioning. I mean, you can, but you can't. You know what I mean? You're a student, they're a cabinet minister. But you're taking your notes, you're getting stuff down, you're interpreting, and then after that, as soon after that as possible, you're converting that into a story. You know, when I was a journalist, I was writing news articles, so I'd convert the interview. I'd have notes. You know, I don't have one here, unfortunately. I'd have my trusty notepad. I'd take my notes. I'd do one or two or three interviews. I'd combine things together, make a story out of it. And the story has to talk about not just what the person said, but what the background is. You know, comparing what they said with each other. You know, possibly raising a concern, possibly raising a criticism, whatever, right? And then the key thing here after that is I'd print my stories in our student newspaper and we'd distribute 20,000 copies of it across campus. So that kind of pressure forces you to learn and to get it right, because if you get it wrong, you're going to hear about it. So that sort of thing. So minimally, if you're in a classroom and an elder is speaking, you should be taking notes. Work with that content as it comes in. And then ideally, after, share that knowledge with your colleagues, with each other. You know, there's all kinds of different ways to do it and different ways that are comfortable. The old Oxford School of Learning, you know, the stuffy British kids with lots of privilege, that's how they would learn, right? Their professors would give a lecture and they'd take all of their notes. And then the professor would go away and the students would get together among themselves, exchange notes, share ideas, and process what they had learned, and then try to apply it by writing their own papers or whatever. You know, that's how to have the one hand for yourself, even in a situation where, you know, it's a fairly traditional learning environment. Does that make sense? Does that help?
Yes, it definitely makes sense, and I do like the idea of sharing feed forward, you know. So maybe listening, and I think it's a good idea to start these up, these student groups in our online learning, which we've not yet done, because they'll have conversation among themselves, peer to peer support. So how does one build this group, you know, like? Do I just set up in the research when they in the survey when they told me a time that fits? So, or as part of a 3 hour class, we can say, you know, read the PowerPoint content on your own before the class. 1 hour would be you present what is the current news article or anything, like a 2 minute presentation by each student. And then after or some other time, or you know what, these blocking and time management our instructor has to do for the students, I find. Remember, we are asking them to put in extra effort on their own time. And really speaking, not everyone is a motivated learner in a formal education.
That's true. And so, you know, there's a number of things that are coming into play here. Certainly, I think, especially in a 3 hour class, creating some time and a format where they can do that is going to be helpful. Especially if students aren't used to doing it. And we know what our public school is like, and we're not always brought through our lower grades as, active involved learners. I mean, my high school was all about not doing high school. So I get that. So people come into a college or university class and they won't have this background, this even or the skills even of listening to somebody and then talking about it with each other. So I think it's a good idea to give people practice in that, as early as possible, so people get used to it. Motivation, I always used to say, and I still say this, motivation is getting people to do something that they don't want to do. And to me, the important words here are they don't want to do it. And so there's a, when I the reason why I think personal learning is so important is that ultimately, it's going to be founded on what people want to do. Now, it's a little outside the scope of what we're talking about here, but we'll talk a little bit about this in the theory section later. But the idea is that personal learning engages learners where they are. So instead of trying to impose a curriculum on them, we try to find out what they're interested in, what they're trying to do, and then help them do it. And that addresses many of the motivational problems, right? Because this is something they're already interested in, already doing, and you're helping them. So in a lot of traditional contexts, and not just in your context, but in traditional college and university courses or the public school sector, they don't have that. My high school classes, my high school teachers did not really care very much at all about what I was interested in doing. They had their curriculum to teach and they taught it. And that creates that problem, right? This won't necessarily solve that problem. And in fact, I think the only way to solve that problem is to focus on what people are already interested in. Not as helpful, I guess, as I would like, but.
No, I think it is really helpful because I like your definition of motivation. And it again comes back to the circle of personal and personalized learning is what is it that somebody's interested in. So, Arlene, Francine, and Carla, what are your thoughts? Arlene, you mentioned you are also taking an online course. Is how does one, do we schedule this peer-to-peer? Students talking to each other without the instructor as part of the class time, not just a discussion forum. Yes, go ahead.
I think that could be beneficial. The course I'm taking now is strictly distance education, but the instructor is trying to schedule a seminar 1 hour a week for the students to enter if they want. It's not marked. It's just an opportunity for the classmates to talk and discuss the ideas. We also have to post every week to start a discussion via the post. But I think the in-person and the verbal part, and whether or not we choose to use video, is also fun. And I think fun is probably one of the most important factors, is that you have to want to attend and to learn.
Yeah.
And I think the real challenge is students feel they need an education, they need the course to complete a diploma or a degree or a certificate, and they're taking it because they have to, it's required. Well, how do you kind of address that issue of making them enjoy it so that they get more out of it? That would be my question. And one other comment that I'll make is, last year I took an oral course for Indigenous Studies, and it took place in a circle, in a classroom, and with an elder, and the elders spoke. We smudged every morning, and it was great. I started out by taking notes, and I was apparently being rude. If an elder's talking, you really need to listen and make eye contact and be attentive. During the discussion, I stopped taking notes and got a lot more out of it. And I just wanted to share that information with everybody. So those are my comments. Thanks.
Yeah, and that's an important point. I mean, there are many cases where it's not going to be appropriate to be doing things like taking notes. And I've encountered that too. What I've found is the practice of having done that also changes how my brain works when I'm listening to somebody, even in a circumstance where I can't take notes. Like right now, even, right? We're talking. I can't really stop and take notes while you're making comments, but I'm still going through the same mental process, right? You're saying things, and in my mind, I'm reframing it, I'm identifying key points. I'm actually engaging with what you're saying as you're saying it. And I would think, and correct me if I'm wrong, that may have been when you were getting more out of, sitting and attending to what the elder was saying. You're not being passive at that point anymore. You're engaging with the words as they are being spoken. Does that sound right to you?
That's absolutely correct. And by actively listening, you do get more out of it, and you do recall more.
Yeah.
It also gives you a different perspective to discuss with your classmates or cohorts.
Yeah.
And I think the variety of being able to take notes during break, or if you just want to jot something down, or afterwards even, it's helpful, especially when we were doing our written assignments. But I think the combination of doing both is good. And it's like anything else. It's variety is engaging.
Right. There's a thing, and your comments remind me, and again, it wouldn't be appropriate in this circumstance that you're describing, but in other cases it is. It's a technique, and you can look it up on the internet, called active listening.
Active listening, yes.
Yeah, and it sounds like you're familiar with that. But for people who might not be, the idea of active listening is when you're in a conversation with someone else, and this is just a very superficial description, but you're in a conversation with someone else and they say something and you take it in and then you reframe it, put it in your own words and then say it back to the person to confirm that you've heard what they said. And then, and you go back and forth like that. And for the theorists in the room, there's the transactional theory of distance learning by Bloom. I think it's Bloom. Is based on that same idea.
Mm-hmm.
And for those of you who are computer nerds, the phenomenon of checksum is the same thing. You get information from a remote computer, you receive it, you do something with it, and you send back the result. It's called a checksum, and the person or the computer that sent it to you checks what you sent back, says, yes, you did receive it correctly. This whole idea of communication, reformulation, response is a very good technique for not only engaging with what you're being told or taught, but also conveying back to the person that, yes, I am hearing this. Yes, I am understanding this. And that's a really important foundation to build on. Can't always do it. But when you can, it's a very effective technique. Okay, I'm going to... It's 12:14. That means 10:14 your time. So we're probably looking at a part three if you want, Manisha.
Oh, yes, definitely part three. I'm really interested in more about personalized learning, more in terms of maybe just a session on active listening, a little bit more about active listening. And I like the tools which you are sharing, like you shared last time, like your audio recording, which you said.
Yeah.
I want to listen from your personal experience, what you did for time management to be successful, to be successful as a researcher. How are you publishing so much, the data management part which you're doing? I've always said I love your webpage, which is like table of contents where you can go into SlideShare and other things. I love your Google Docs, which is like an encyclopedia, you're adding. So more tips on organization. Because, we have to learn to manage the data. I love what you said, what junk, to delete it. It's available everywhere. We don't need to be so possessive about all the junk emails we get, And so more about, tools to stay organized. Mm-hmm. Because that is personal data management, which we are doing. Like you showed us Feedly.com to pick up. And I can think of it as a discussion prompt, which I do in my class with students,
where
I tell them to find something current on the sociology and inequality topic, what's currently happening in the news, whether it's a tweet which they came up. And if somebody does not want to take the trouble to do a Google search, and if they do Feedly, it will automatically come in their inbox. Not tell me what excuse would I have my student have not to read from the inbox, The point is I'm positioning them to be successful with this, whether it is a Google alert they set up, or Feedly.com. Now they have it in their inbox. So you can just read, mm-hmm. even if you don't want to have your own opinion. I want to hear different voices, different sounds in this online classroom. Just because it's online does not mean that people who are silent can stay silent. So here is an opportunity for Carla and Francine to say something. Carla, how do you think you can use this knowledge in your teaching with the Women Building Futures? And Francine, you're welcome to share too.
Hi there, it's Carla here. I really have enjoyed this talk. I learn a lot by listening. I have enjoyed the fact of knowing that 80% of the learning is informal. I do in my own self-learning, so now that I've, taken this webinar, I do go back to my team and I talk about it, and it helps to you know, cement that learning in my, you know, and put it in my own knowledge. I reflect on it and I try to practice, and I'm really, it's actually built my confidence to know that I'm actually doing some of the same mm-hmm. things that you do, Stephen. It's just like, and I do encourage my students to do the same thing too. And I do provide them space to, after a discussion, to discuss amongst themselves and to really look at what they've learned and how they're going to use it in their own lives. So I really, I'm getting a lot from this, just so you know, and I really enjoy listening. I could listen to you all day, actually. So thank you very much.
Well, I'll keep doing these sessions as long as people want to listen to them. They got lots to talk about. So that's great. I'm really pleased that you're getting stuff out of this.
I love the use of the word cementing, you know, like mm-hmm. cement with the learning. That's really, because, you know, not just concrete cement, but it's also like talk to someone. So if they heard something, and you mentioned the same thing, like create a post, write about it, you know, mm-hmm. Sort of reflection is what we do. So I do have Francine, and the other name shows Jahasena, but I think that's the name of your organization.
Oh.
You're welcome to, please write in chat if you do not want to unmute yourself, or what did you pick up from this 60 minutes of session which we did? You know, from this
Hello, this is Francine.
Yes, Francine, hello.
So it was very informative, but I'm just trying to get a better understanding. Like, I like being invited to this, and so thank you for that. And I'm just trying to get a better understanding of overall, I guess. Don't get me wrong, the teachings from Downis are good. I'm just a little confused because this is my first time joining in on this. So.
And you kind of came into it because this is part two, sort of halfway through, which I'm sure didn't help.
Yeah, so, but this was very informative. I wish I was there for part one.
Well,
so what are you confused about now? Just tell us. We can, you know, share. It can be like a review, a quick review, you know, not everything, but maybe a review, a couple of points.
Yeah.
What would you like to know? What are you confused about? That's very good, you know. Everything begins with confusion and chaos, you know.
Like, just overall about this personal learning.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so let me think about this. When we think about learning, most of the time, we think about learning as having to do with some subject or some topic that we're trying to learn about. Maybe we're trying to remember some facts, or maybe we're trying to acquire some skill. And the idea is that, especially in a group, everybody learns the same set of facts. Everybody learns the same skill. And so what we're learning is defined externally, by the curriculum, by the teacher, by circumstance. And what personal learning is about is the understanding, and I think it begins with an understanding that instead of everybody learning the same thing, even in a formal learning circumstance, instead of everyone learning the same thing, each person learns something different for themselves. They, you know, we may all be presented with the same information, but we each take something different from it based on our background, based on our understanding, based on our needs. And so personal learning as a topic is an explicit recognition of this. It's me as a teacher saying, I know that you are all individual people and you will all take something different from this. And you have different needs and different purposes for being here and for talking about this right now. And so that's me as a teacher. And it's also you as a learner, and me as a learner, because, you know, I practice this myself, understanding that the challenge of learning for me isn't to conquer the content. The challenge is to get from that content or from that learning environment what I need in order to live my life or to solve the problems that I face or to manage myself in the community, and to allow myself to define for myself what success is in learning and what my objectives are in learning. And I think, and that's why I, you know, that's the basis behind me talking about, you know, getting content that's relevant. That's the basis behind me talking about the need for interactivity in learning, right? It's to allow myself as a learner, or to help myself as a teacher, create or have this individual personal learning for each person, including myself. Does that help clarify what I'm talking about?
Yes, it does. Thank you.
Yeah.
Dr. Downs, you showed us a slide about salience, not relevance. You know, that was really good.
Yeah, it's... Yeah, salience is one of those words nobody ever uses. But like I say, it's, you know, you have information in front of you. The information that's salient is the stuff that stands out, the stuff that sparkles. You know, and personal learning is about being free to focus on that. You know, I sometimes talk about, you know, if you're at the bus stop and people are getting off the bus and you're waiting for your mother to get off the bus, a bunch of people will get off the bus and you see them all, but you recognize your mother right away. Ah, that's her, right? And all of your attention focuses on your mother. And personal learning is about saying, that's okay. It's okay for you to focus on your mother and not all those other people. It doesn't mean that they don't exist and they're not important. But for you right now, it's about your mother. And then it's also about, okay, well, how is it that we're able to recognize our mother among all those other people? And what makes our mother the thing that sparkles for us? And that's a hard topic. And it's hard to, you know, it's hard to think of learning that way. It's easy to think of people getting off the bus that way, but it's hard to think of learning that way. And most people don't. And most people think of learning as something that other people do to you. But really, For me, learning is something that I do for myself. And the other people are there to help me and not to do things to me. Now, they may not have that attitude, but that's the attitude I have toward them. And it's, you know, it's about changing perspective a bit.
So that is the challenge, changing perspective in Indigenous environment. Because, you know, even doing the time management for a course, which is, to me right now, I'm finding that everybody is different or whatever the expectations, I don't know, from online learning.
Yeah.
You know, if it is similar to the instructor speaking, then I had a feedback that, you know what, I was so disappointed in this class because it was similar to online learning. You know, look at more, it was similar to face-to-face.
Uh-huh.
Another person said that, you know what, I wanted face-to-face and I like it like that, but 3 hours is too much.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, scheduling, dividing that 3 hour time. But the point is, why do we have to stick with this 3 hour time? That's why I'm trying to get to know my students, is what little time can I fit in their schedule and other courses, which is personalized learning, because you know, it's a group I'm trying to bring together. But we are so used to one instructor in the class, 3 hours of time there together. Mostly it's the instructor presenting, you know. There could be some learning group activity. Hence, I'm really interested in both synchronous and asynchronous peer-to-peer support group. Synchronous would mean live, whenever they have time together, or it can be part of a 3 hour class, whenever, whatever the topic we tell them. You know, because it's really good for the instructor to sit back. The point is, right now, the instructor, we're not sitting back, because, you know, you are listening to your students and trying to summarize. That's a very active process. And trying to link it with the topic in the language of, in the words of the students.
Mm-hmm.
And it can be also asynchronous in a discussion forum for the topic. You know, so my goal right now is to set up this peer-to-peer, student-to-student communication or conversation. And I see in other places, in other discussion forums, and I have also taken many online courses, where we can post our assignments, essays which we have done. But really speaking, it does not work so well. In fact, many in Indigenous environment.
Uh-huh.
My students in the past, even when I did peer-to-peer and I gave them the same assessment form with very basic things, you know, like, is the citation okay? You know, are you having intro, body, conclusion? Like giving points and making sure, not exactly a rubric, but like a checklist to be sure that they met whatever was required for the assignment. That was also very challenging. You cannot show in the people are not, my students are not willing to share in the discussion forum and, you know, post their assignments. I think it could also be the residential school history in the past where we were protected about things people will steal. It could also be the family repetition, because everyone knows everyone, mm-hmm. and a nation is a family. It could be somebody laughing at someone. So if you're sharing a personal story, I find it a bit challenging, honestly, because we are saying personal learning. We are saying Indigenous voices. We want to hear Indigenous voices. Now, what does Indigenous voices mean? People will share their personal experience and story. And it's unique and different. What from my family? And you're writing it down. You know, when you write it down in the book and it gets published and the world reads, that's okay. But when you're doing like a starter text or an assignment in the college environment and sharing and writing down, it's different from the oral culture which we are used to. So I don't know to what extent. I'm just trying to keep it neutral. Like, I do like to make learning relevant by, and when people are in online, is sharing their personal experience in their own words. Because it clicks. You know what, when I read a textbook, sociological imagination does not make much sense to me. But when I say, if I say manifest or latent, you know, manifest meaning what's visible in communication, and latent means what's invisible. So when somebody answers to me, you know, how would you want to be known? And in plain language, when my student answers in response and tells me, you know, we are known by our ancestors and by our parents. And that's what we do in introduction. Mm-hmm. See, when we introduce ourselves in the plain screen, we always take the name of our parents, like, you know, Manisha Nitsikasun Notari Balwant Nikari Bimla Nita Toskan Masnaik and Kamik Maskuchi East Cultural College. So, you know what, so using the words of the students in society, how are you known as? What is your identity? It's by your family. And using the words of the student is very powerful. It's very engaging, satisfying for the student as well as the instructor. But my challenge still in the online environment, when for people to critique each other's, not necessarily critique, but just to comment or to review, even in paper format, was not easy.
Right.
Or, and some people were scared, you know, like they really told me when I asked them, because once I built a relationship, then I just asked them, and then they, or at the end of the class, they would, you know, at the end of the course, they'd give me the feedback. Because I like to do a sharing circle with my students. And, you know, my teaching practice in the past 8 years has improved so much because I ask my students, you know, what did you like, what you didn't like, you know, and it's so beautiful when you hear from them, and that helps us improve. And as you're mentioning, that's my personal learning. I want to be more effective. You know, I want to communicate with my students. I want my students to succeed. And if I get feedback on what they're taking or what's to be improved, it's good. It's good to listen. My challenge still is how to make my Indigenous students communicate, you know, or share more their thoughts and feelings. So I do give them some discussion prompts and questions, and I use a couple of, you know, what's controversial, what's relevant, what's current, what's happening, and or pick up, you know, in your different voices by you bringing on what's currently happening. 1 minute each student shares, like a sharing circle, then I hear different voices, and it's like my startup and warm up, you know.
Yeah, and I think a sharing circle, and I've seen examples of you doing that sort of approach here in these sessions. I think that's a good way of creating that kind of opening or possibility for students to contribute, for participants to contribute. And, you know, if I had to say something, you know, draw a key lesson from this, my key lesson would be, and it's similar to my original point, it's going to be different for every individual, for you know, every community, you know, for every culture. I mean, this is, I've done talks with people, you know, in numerous cultures around the world, and it's different every time. Even different groups of people right here in Ottawa, it's different with each group. Is it building trust?
Is it like building trust with my students? I don't know. When do they start opening up and talking?
I'm not keen on saying it's building trust, because I think that's a different thing, but it's definitely building expectations in the sense of they get to understand what you will do and what you won't do, what they can do, you know, what works for them in their particular community. You know, again, it's going to be different. For some communities, trust is really, really important. You know, but I've also gone to technical conferences, and trust, they don't care. You know, what they care is about tech. You know, what can you do?
We don't want to leave because she wasn't here.
So on behalf of all of us in this learning circle, I'd like to say thank you to Dr. Damas, and I will coordinate with him, and we will host another session.
Yeah, we'll have a part three.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thanks, everyone. Bye-bye. Bye.
So we just went through the day, and so that was...